This haunting begins, as many do, a family searching for a fresh start. They find a beautiful farmhouse, but the second that they pull up on move-in day, it gets strange. The previous tenant warns the family to be careful in the house, saying it's a house of death. Then they begin to hear and see things. What started as an exciting new chapter quickly turned into one of the most terrifying hauntings we've ever covered on the show. And the ending to this story will blow your mind. It will leave you thinking, wait, what? I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark. Let's get right into it. South Carolina, 1991. For the Fisher family, life had taken an unexpected turn. Ken Fisher had spent years working in insurance sales, but business had really slowed down fast. The steady income that he had been supporting his family with was disappearing. So he really found himself at a crossroads and made a decision. Rather than searching for another sales job, Ken felt called towards something entirely different. For years, he had felt drawn towards ministry. He wanted to become a preacher and dedicate his life to his faith. His wife, Linda, stood by him completely, but that didn't make it easy. As anyone who has ever given up a steady job to go back to school, you know, bills continue to roll in no matter what you have going on in your life. So it can be really scary to give up that security of your old job and take a chance, go down a different path, especially when you're supporting a family and children like Ken was. The Fishers weren't just supporting themselves as a couple, they had 7 children, 2 older kids and 5 younger ones. So every dollar mattered. The family realized they couldn't continue living in the house they were in. They needed somewhere much more affordable, yet somehow large enough to fit such a big family. Not everyone was looking forward to this move. One of the least excited was Linda's teenage son, Matt Brown. Like most teenagers, Matt already had a life, friends, school, and now he was being asked to leave all of it behind and start over somewhere completely unfamiliar. For a teenager, that can feel like losing your entire world. Still, the family eventually found what looked like the perfect solution. A rental house in Abbeville, South Carolina. At first, it seemed almost too good to be true. Now, a little background, Abbeville was founded in the 1750s, so this is a southern town with history. The downtown streets are lined with old brick, historic churches, and colorful storefronts have stood for generations. Old farmhouses sit beneath enormous oak trees draped in Spanish moss. The town had witnessed the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, economic booms, and economic collapse. Just outside town sat the farmhouse the Fishers had agreed to rent. This house was big. It is your classic white southern farmhouse with a wide wraparound porch stretching across the front. It had tall windows, lots of open yard where the younger children could run and play. When they pulled up to the house on move-in day, Linda was so impressed. It was so beautiful. So this house is massive, but it is also very old, dating back to the 1750s. You know, if you get a house and it was built in the 1750s in South Carolina, or really any of those southern states, there's going to be a ghost, at least one. You got to be expecting that. Of course, a house this old came with its fair share of issues. It had clearly been neglected. There was paint peeling from the wooden siding. Creaky floors, parts of the house were in need of some major TLC. The previous owners hadn't exactly kept up with repairs, but that's why the rent was so affordable. For a family with 7 children trying to make ends meet, it felt like a blessing. On move-in day, the Fishers pulled up the gravel driveway towards their new home, with all their belongings packed in their car. But as soon as they got to the house, they noticed something unusual. The realtor was already waiting outside, but she wasn't alone. The previous tenants were still there. So there are 3 women at the house when the Fishers pull up. The realtor, who looked to be in her 40s, perhaps early 50s, and 2 older women, who were slowly loading the last of their belongings into a pickup truck. They were literally moving out while the Fishers were moving in. The 2 previous tenants, 2 older women, were pretty somber. Not like, hey, new tenants, enjoy it, we loved it here. They really didn't talk to them very much. They were just slowly shuffling boxes from the house to their vehicle. At first, it didn't really seem strange, just an awkward overlap in timing. But these three women, this is a detail that will become important later on. Even as a teenager, Matt instantly couldn't shake the feeling that something wasn't right. Standing in front of the farmhouse, he couldn't help but wonder, why was a house this big, historic, beautiful, so unbelievably cheap? It didn't make sense. Then he stepped inside. The house smelled old. There was a lot of sunlight pouring through the windows, but somehow the house still felt pretty dark. The place had a heavy feeling, and almost immediately, Matt looks over and sees it. Something that stops him in his tracks. Just past the entryway, there was a door inside the house, secured with a large padlock. This was a door that someone had gone out of their way to physically lock shut. Matt's wondering, why would there be a padlocked room inside someone's house? And this is where the story differs from a lot of other hauntings that start slowly. Families move in, everything seems normal for weeks, sometimes months. Then, little things begin happening. This was not one of those stories. Here, the warning signs were there from the second they walked inside this house. Now, here's the thing about this farmhouse. It came with rules. The realtor walks the family from room to room, giving a tour of the house, and she paused in the doorway of one room. She points, and spread across the floor was a large antique rug with faded rose-colored patterns. The realtor told the family the owners would like this rug to stay exactly where it is. It is very old and fragile. Please do not move it. This was an oddly specific request, but the family is renting, so they just say, okay, sure. They nodded and continued the tour. A short time later, Linda stepped with the realtor to take a look outside the property while everyone else was inside and unloading boxes. Near the back of the house sat an old weathered wooden outbuilding, sort of like a shed slash outhouse. Curious, Linda walked right over and reached for the handle, but before her hand even touched the door, the realtor quickly called out, "No," almost startling her. The realtor warns Linda, "Do not ever go in there and do not let your children go in there either." She is very stern when she says this. There wasn't an explanation. It was like, oh, there's just a bunch of storage. It was just, do not go in there, period. Linda looks down and sees this massive heavy rock at the foot of the shed door. Like, again, someone had placed this here to keep it shut. But again, the family's renting, so they just say, okay, we will go along with the house rules. Back inside, Matt couldn't stop thinking about the locked room. As one of the older women, the previous tenants, carried another box towards the truck, he called out to her and asked, "Ma'am, what's behind that locked door?" The woman stopped walking, turned to him, and stared for a second, then said, "That was my brother's room. He took his own life in there. Please don't go inside out of respect for him." And then she continues walking out the door. Oh my gosh, this was creepy, because Matt knows someone passed away in there in a very sad way. Inside what was now going to be his family's home. Trying to shake that uneasy feeling, Matt decided to help the women finish loading their belongings. Seemed like the nice thing to do, and he wanted them to be on their way. So he grabbed a few boxes, loaded them into their truck, and after the car was fully loaded, one of the older women climbed inside, but the other turned, looked directly at Matt, and said, "Be careful in this house. It's full of death." And with that, she got into the truck and pulled away. Within seconds, it disappeared down the long driveway. Matt just stood there, weirded out. This was really probably the last thing you would want to hear when you're moving into a new house with your family. It's full of death. What does that even mean? Was she talking about the man who had died in the locked bedroom? Or was she trying to warn him about something else? This felt meaningful. Her warning. The rest of the day passed in a blur. The family unpacked boxes. The younger kids ran through the farmhouse picking out bedrooms. Everyone seemed excited about their new home. Everyone except Matt. He couldn't shake the feeling that something about this house was not right. That first night, he was so on edge, he couldn't sleep. So Matt laid awake in bed reading a book, trying to distract himself from this uncomfortable feeling. The house was quiet. He knew his family had all gone to sleep hours ago. Suddenly, he heard it. A faint, squeaking sound. He immediately looked toward his bedroom door, which was closed, and sees the doorknob was moving, actually turning, slowly twisting in one direction, then back again, over and over, as though someone standing in the hallway was carefully trying the handle. Matt slowly sat up in bed. His heart immediately started racing. He watched the knob continue twisting. Then the bedroom door swung open, but only halfway. He knows this is not a family member. He knows they're asleep, and he just knows this is not them. But from where he's sitting on the bed, he couldn't see around the corner. Whoever or whatever had opened the door should have walked into the room by now. He waited. There was no silhouette or shadow, just silence. Finally, Matt gets the courage to get out of bed and walk towards the door. He slowly leans his head around the corner and sees the hallway is completely dark and empty. There's no one. Every bedroom door was shut, his family's still asleep. Yet someone or something had just turned the doorknob and opened his bedroom door. Matt quietly closed the door again, climbed back into bed, and decided not to tell anyone. After all, what could he even say? A few days later, there was another strange incident. This time, the entire family witnessed it. The younger kids were outside playing soccer with Ken in the backyard. It was one of those warm afternoons, and everyone was settling into their new home. At one point, someone kicked the ball much harder than intended. It sailed high through the air and disappeared straight through a hole in the roof of the old wooden outbuilding. That same weathered shed, the realtor had specifically warned them to never enter. Inside the house, Linda happened to be washing dishes at the kitchen sink. She looked out the window just in time to see Ken jogging toward the building, and her stomach dropped. She suddenly remembered what the realtor said, "Do not go in there." But the problem was, Ken never heard that conversation. He hadn't been outside when the realtor warned Linda. To him, it was just an old storage shed with a soccer ball inside. Linda immediately started waving frantically through the kitchen window, trying to get his attention, motioning for him to stop. But the windows were closed. Ken never heard her. When he reached the building, he noticed the massive rock wedged against the bottom of the door. It wasn't a small stone. It was a heavy rock that looked like it had been intentionally placed there to keep the door from opening. Ken bent down, grabbed hold, and struggled to drag it out of the way. This took real effort. Finally, the rock slid aside. The instant it cleared the doorway, bang, the shed door exploded outward. A violent blast of air erupted from inside. This was not a breeze or the kind of wind that slips through cracked boards. This was a powerful, unnatural burst, so strong it caught everyone completely off guard. The clothes hanging on a nearby clothesline suddenly whipped sideways. The children stopped playing, and Ken sort of staggered backward. Even Linda, who had just stepped out onto the back porch, felt the force of it. This gust of wind struck her so hard that she stumbled backward into the porch wall. Everyone looked at each other, confused, trying to make sense of what had just happened, because there was one major problem. There hadn't been any wind that day. The trees were almost perfectly still. And yet, somehow, the moment that door opened, it was as if something trapped inside that old building had rushed out all at once. That blast of air felt unnatural. Linda couldn't stop thinking about what had happened. She wondered what had just come out of that building. What had they just opened? Linda said later that night, the atmosphere inside the farmhouse suddenly felt off. Late that evening, after the children had gone to bed, Linda was relaxing in one of the back rooms of the farmhouse. It was very quiet, when she suddenly heard something strange. It's coming from outside. She stood up and walked through the dark hallway towards the front window. And as she looked out, she was horrified. Hanging from one of the large trees in the front yard was the figure of a man, a rope around his neck. Completely motionless. Linda froze for a split second, trying to process what she was seeing. Then instinct took over. She threw open the front door, raced across the porch, ran towards the tree. But as soon as she looked up, there was no one there, no man or rope, nothing hanging from the branches, just the tree. She stood there baffled. Had she imagined it? Or had she just seen something impossible? The days rolled on, and Ken spent nearly all of his time at seminary. Between classes, studying, and preparing sermons, he was often gone 11 to 12 hours a day. He felt this was his calling, but this absence left Linda carrying much of the responsibility at home. And for Matt, this was becoming really difficult. Years later, he admitted he struggled with this transition, and from his perspective, it felt like school had become his stepfather's first priority and the family had become second. The relationship between the two was strained. With Ken gone so much, Matt naturally began taking on more responsibility around the house. Helping with repairs or watching the younger kids, he would work outside whenever something needed to be done. He really stepped into that role of man of the house because Ken was gone so much. It was on one of these afternoons, while Matt was out in the yard, he happened to glance up toward the second floor of the farmhouse, and standing in one of the upstairs windows was a little girl. She smiled and began waving at him. Matt smiled back and waved and assumed it was one of his younger sisters trying to get his attention. He continued making his way around the side of the house, looked up, and saw that his little sisters were outside playing. His stomach dropped. If she was outside, then who had just waved at him? Matt immediately dropped what he was doing and sprinted into the house, up the staircase, down the hallway, straight to the bedroom with the window. He threw the door open, and there was no one there. He knew something was happening inside this farmhouse. He just couldn't explain what. And his thoughts kept returning to one place. The locked bedroom. The room where the former tenant's brother had taken his own life. The room everyone seemed so determined to keep closed. Matt finally decided he was going to find out what was inside. So one afternoon, while everyone else was away, he and his friend James got a screwdriver and walked down the hallway toward the padlocked door. James really wasn't thrilled about the idea, but it was sort of a curiosity thing. The padlock itself wasn't difficult to remove. Within minutes, the boys had backed out the screws, securing the latch. Matt took a deep breath and slowly pushed the door open. And immediately, they both felt it. A rush of ice-cold air poured out of the room. Cold, frigid air, which was completely out of place in the middle of a hot South Carolina afternoon. James feels this, and he immediately hesitates. He does not want to go inside that room. Something about it made him very uncomfortable. So he stayed near the doorway. Matt stepped inside alone. The bedroom looked like it had been frozen in time. An old iron bed sat in the center of the room. Dust coated nearly every surface. Antique furniture lined the walls exactly as it had decades earlier. It felt like no one had touched anything since the day the room had been locked. Then they noticed something even stranger. The unmistakable smell of cigarette smoke. Fresh cigarette smoke. Not stale tobacco lingering. The guys look at each other, and it smells as though someone had been standing there smoking only moments earlier. But that wasn't possible. The room had been locked. Then, suddenly, bang, a huge crash echoed from somewhere upstairs. The sound was so loud that both the boys jumped. They hurried into the hallway and climbed the staircase. When they reached the second floor, everything seemed wrong. Every bedroom door was closed. That immediately caught Matt's attention because the family almost always left the doors open during the day to keep air circulating through the old farmhouse. The hallway was silent. Neither boy saw anyone. After a few minutes, they were convinced. Maybe they imagined it. Who knows? So they turned to head back downstairs. Then, bang, another deafening crash. It was even louder than the first. Matt stood on that staircase and began to wonder, what if that lock had never been there to keep people out? What if it had been there to keep something in? By now, Linda really dreaded the evenings. Once the kids were asleep and the farmhouse was so quiet, the strange activity always seemed to get more intense. One night, it was pretty late, and she was making her usual rounds, locking the doors and turning off all the lights, when she too caught the unmistakable smell of cigarette smoke. It was strong. Someone was inside the house smoking. She's wondering, who would that be? She follows the smell upstairs and realizes it's coming from her bedroom. The closer she got, the stronger the smell became. As she reached the doorway and slowly looked around the corner, she froze. Standing in front of the bedroom window was an older man, gray hair, wearing a white button-up shirt, his back turned towards her as he quietly stared out into the dark night. A lit cigarette rested between his fingers, smoke filling her bedroom. Linda instinctively jerked backward behind the wall. Her heart was racing, wondering what did she just see. After a few moments, she gathers the courage, leaned back around the corner, reached for the light switch, and flipped it on. She looked into her bedroom to see the man was gone. One second he had been standing there, the next the room was empty. She didn't hear any footsteps or doors closing. There was no one running down the hallway. Linda stood there, staring into her bedroom, that smell of cigarette smoke still lingering in the air. She knew she had not imagined it. Someone was in her bedroom. Now, up until this point, neither Linda nor Matt had told anyone about what they were experiencing. But it finally had become too much. One evening, Linda sits down with Matt and she tells him about everything. But she had experienced every terrifying encounter. And she talks about the man in the bedroom and she sees Matt's expression change. He says, "Mom, I've seen things too." And for the first time, the two of them start to compare experiences. The little girl waving from the upstairs window, the bedroom door opening by itself, the smell of fresh cigarette smoke. Neither of them had known the other was living through the pretty much exact same thing. This was terrifying, but also validating because it meant that neither of them was imagining it. And as they sat there together trying to make sense of everything, the farmhouse suddenly exploded with noise. Glass shattered. Both of them jumped to their feet. Jars sitting on nearby shelves launched across the room. One after another, they slammed into the walls, exploding into pieces. The kitchen sounded like it was under attack. Neither of them had touched anything. Matt instinctively moved in front of his mother. Up until that point, everything that had happened had been unsettling. Seeing apparitions, odd smells and noises, but now whatever was inside the house appeared willing to become violent with the family. And the worst part, the Fishers had only lived there for a short time, just a couple months. Matt was determined to find answers. If something terrible had happened inside the farmhouse, maybe looking into the history of the home would explain it. He spent hours digging through old newspaper archives and local records. And before long, a pattern began to emerge. One article described a man who had hanged himself from a tree in the front yard. Matt immediately thought about the figure his mother had seen outside one of those first nights. Another report described the tragic death of a young girl who had fallen down the staircase, breaking her neck. His mind immediately flashed to the little girl waving at him from the upstairs window. Then he uncovered another death. A man took his life inside the farmhouse. Matt wondered if this was the same man the former tenant had quietly warned him about on move-in day. At this point, he was not questioning whether the farmhouse was haunted. He was wondering, though, how one property could hold so much tragedy, so much death and suffering. Then came one of the strangest encounters of all. One morning, Matt was getting ready for the day, standing alone in the bathroom shaving. He was rinsing his razor in the sink, and he sees something move near the drain. He watches as a large spider slowly crawled out. This wasn't a teeny tiny little house spider. This resembled a tarantula. Then quickly another appeared, this time from beside the toilet, then another. Within seconds, they seemed to be emerging from everywhere. The sink, the bathtub. Matt hated spiders, and within moments, this was like a full infestation in this bathroom. He was totally panicked, tried to scream, but nothing would come out. Finally, he forced himself through the bathroom door. The moment he stumbled back into the hallway, he turned and looked, and they were all gone. Every single one, there was dozens of spiders all over this bathroom, and they had all vanished. As time went on, Matt was beginning to become afraid of what would happen if the family stayed in the farmhouse. Would his family ultimately suffer the same fate as so many before them if they stayed? He was pretty desperate, so he visited a local pastor named Jimmy, and Matt told him everything about the farmhouse, what he had experienced, about what his mom had felt, seen. And he tells him everything about the apparitions and the attacks and this growing fear that something evil was inside that old farmhouse. Pastor Jimmy listened very carefully and then handed Matt a small bottle of anointing oil. He instructed the family to pray over one another, read scripture aloud, and anoint every entrance into the home, every door and window, pretty much every possible point of entry. Matt goes home and talks with Linda, and the family followed his instructions exactly. Linda read passages from the Bible while they prayed together, and one by one, they anointed every doorway. They went to every window and prayed, even went to the fireplaces. Only one place remained, the chimney. Matt was really going to do this right, so he climbed onto a ladder and pulled himself onto the roof of the farmhouse. He carefully made his way across the old shingles toward the final chimney, and then he stopped. He said an overwhelming pressure settled across his entire body. This horrible pressure, like invisible hands were pushing down on his shoulders and his chest, like something was trying to fight him and force him off the roof. Then something caught his eye. He looked down on his arm and saw a hornet crawling across his forearm. Matt is terrified because he is severely allergic to hornet stings. One sting could become life-threatening. Within seconds, he hears buzzing. He looks up and sees that hornets are surrounding him. Dozens of them. They begin striking him over and over on his arms, his face, his neck. Matt is swinging at them, desperately trying to get the hornets off of him, but also keep his balance. When suddenly, his foot slipped. He fell from the roof. Linda screamed and ran toward him. Miraculously, he survived the fall, bruised and shaken, but fine. This incident was the final straw for the Fishers. They no longer believed the farmhouse was just haunted or creepy. They believed it was dangerous. They went and packed their belongings and left, after only 4 months. After they moved out, Linda refused to ever step foot inside the farmhouse again. Before turning over the keys, though, Ken and Matt returned one final time to clean the property. It was just a few more hours and they could finally close that chapter forever. They went back to the farmhouse, began cleaning. Matt vacuumed one of the bedrooms, and he suddenly became really focused on that faded rose-colored rug. That same rug that the realtor had insisted under no circumstances should ever be moved. Curiosity gets the better of him, so he rolls it back, and painted directly onto the wooden floor beneath were strange markings, symbols and writing, and right in the center, a massive pentagram. Ken walks in and sees it. Neither of them wanted to remain in that room another second. They finished gathering their things, stepped outside, and just then, a Cadillac rolled into the driveway. Nice car. The landlord had arrived, or at least that's who they assumed it was. The driver's door opened, and Ken and Matt watch as an unusually beautiful blonde woman gets out of the car. This woman was very attractive, almost striking. Without introducing herself, she walked directly into the farmhouse, barely acknowledging either of them. Then, a few moments later, two other equally beautiful young women got out of the car and followed her inside. Minutes later, the blonde stormed back outside. She looked furious. She walks right up to Ken and Matt and asks, "What did you do?" And then she says, "There aren't any spirits here anymore." Ken and Matt are sort of just standing there like, "What is going on?" Then they heard her turn toward the other two women and say, "We'll have to hold another seance. They're gone." But what happened next is truly disturbing. As the three women walked back towards the Cadillac, Matt looked at them and realized they no longer looked the same. The beautiful, youthful blonde now appeared dramatically older, like she had aged decades in just a few seconds. He cannot believe his eyes. He sees the other two women had aged as well. Just a few minutes ago, the blonde was radiant and glowing with this unnatural, youthful look, and now she wasn't. The men watched as the women got into the car, angry, and drove off. The family never saw or heard from these women ever again. It's believed that these women had practiced witchcraft inside the farmhouse. Were they harnessing the energy from the house? And many have actually wondered, were these three women the realtor and the two former tenants? The same three women that were there when the Fishers moved in. Whether the symbols beneath the rug, the seances, and the tragedies that took place at the farmhouse were somehow connected, no one can say for certain. But what we do know is that the Fisher family only survived 4 months inside that house before fleeing for good. Matt would later go on to serve two tours in Iraq as a U.S. Army sergeant. He would experience things that few people could truly imagine, yet despite everything he went through overseas, he has always maintained that what happened inside that old farmhouse in Abbeville was real and actually helped him prepare for anything and everything he came across. To this day, he has never forgotten the house. None of the family has. I cannot get over how these women looked older within seconds. That is just so scary and creepy. 1 minute they were youthful and radiant, and the next they were haggard looking. Ugh. I am so interested to hear your thoughts on this haunting, especially the ending. Please let me know in the comments. I always love to hear your take. If you all want more of these Southern Gothic types of hauntings, let me know. They are some of my favorite. So I would be more than happy to continue doing these kinds of cases. But you just let me know, because I want to give you what you want.